English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The headlines this hour. Iran expresses its readiness for prisoner swap with the U.S., saying this will pave the way for the release of its nationals held on baseless charges of violating illegal sanctions. Local Syrian sources say Turkey's military has warned citizens in northern Syria to stay in their homes as Ankara deploys drones and troops to border cities in Aleppo Governorate. Also ahead, Britain's inflation rate hitting a record high in four decades as soaring food and energy prices deepen the cost of living crisis.
Well, welcome to the studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is Mias. Thanks for joining us.
Iran's foreign ministry spokesman says the Islamic Republic is ready to swap prisoners with the U.S. Nasser Kanani said that Tehran has repeatedly expressed its readiness to discuss the issue of prisoners exchange with Washington, irrespective of indirect talks to revive the 2015 nuclear deal. He said the swap will pave the way for the release of Iranian nationals held in the U.S. on baseless charges of violating illegal sanctions imposed on Tehran. Kanani called on the U.S. to set aside, quote, theatrical shows and, instead, eliminate obstacles to the prisoner's swap. Special envoy of the Iranian president for Afghanistan says the Islamic Republic has followed the policy of interaction with the Taliban government based on the support it enjoys from the Afghan people. Hassan Kazemi Ghomi made the remarks during a press conference on the first anniversary of the U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan. He said, however, that Tehran would not recognize the Taliban until an all-inclusive government is formed there. Ghomi also touched on America's hasty exit, saying Washington definitely failed in Afghanistan. But he warned that the U.S. is still in the pursuit of its goals as American spy services are operating there.
A year ago, the United States marked a chaotic end to 20 years of war in Afghanistan, following a hurried pullout of troops that saw the Taliban reclaiming power in the country. Here in Tehran, Iranian officials and political analysts sat together to discuss different aspects of the incident. They regard Washington's exit as an escape from the Afghan quagmire after it failed to achieve its geostrategic objectives there.
Today, the significance of Afghanistan has not diminished in the eyes of the Americans. They didn't leave the country to let China, Russia, and Iran invest in it. The U.S. had to leave because it totally failed there. But it will continue to make the best of its efforts to destabilize Afghanistan.
Last year, in late August, the U.S. evacuated thousands of troops from Afghanistan in just a few days, following President Joe Biden's order to exit fully by August 30, 2021. The withdrawal marked the end of two decades of war in Afghanistan, which sought to bring peace to the country, but left a trail of chaos and mayhem.
The United States not only did not fight terrorism during its two decades of presence in Afghanistan, but had a role in many acts of terrorism to legitimize and prolong its presence there.
1 year after the U.S. pullout, Afghanistan is still bogged down in turmoil. The country has been the scene of recurrent terrorist attacks, some of which have been claimed by the Daesh terrorist group. Iran says the U.S. has resorted to Daesh to wage a proxy war in Afghanistan to make up for its losses.
The U.S. continues to back terrorists such as Daesh to destabilize Afghanistan. Aside from Daesh, it has been hosting some 7,000 Afghan military forces from the previous Afghan army to train them. What's the goal of such military trainings?
Since the Taliban takeover, Iran has been calling for an all-inclusive government in Afghanistan as the ultimate way out of the persisting instability in the war-torn country.
Experts here describe the U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan a lasting shame for America and the worst fiasco after its loss in the 1950s Vietnam War. They say the chaotic exit is also a lesson for the region that wherever Washington has set foot, it has left nothing but mess and destruction for the hosting nations. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Turkey's military is warning citizens in northern Syria to stay in their homes as Ankara gets prepared to stage an attack. Local Syrian sources say the strike alert comes as Turkish drones and troops have been deployed to border cities in Aleppo Governorate. Turkey has ramped up its attacks on Syrian border cities recently. 3 Syrian military personnel were killed and 6 others injured in Tuesday's airstrikes on the outskirts of Aleppo. Syrian military sources say the strikes are part of Turkey's long-running efforts in support of terrorist groups in the country's north. Damascus has responded by targeting Turkish bases and armed groups inside of Syria. It has vowed not to let any attack on its army positions go unanswered. Earlier, we reached out to our correspondent in Damascus, Mohammed Ali, to talk about Turkey's fresh strike on northern Syria. He says the Syrian army has vowed to directly respond to Turkish attacks.
The Syrian army will respond back directly to any gunfire on all front lines. This is definitely a significant development happening there in the north, perhaps the first time we see such kind of direct clashes or targeting between Syria and Turkey over there. Also, during the night, just yesterday, some mosques in Turkish villages on the Turkish side of the border announced warnings using the speakers of those mosques to the families to stay indoor, as there will be a military ground operation by Turkey into Syria. This amid reconnaissance drones flying over the borderline, and also amid reports that the Turkish army deployed a large number of troops on that borderline. However, following that announcement inside mosques over there, the governor of Gaziantep, Gul over there, said on Twitter on his account that the announcements exceeded its purpose and that the situation is normal and there's nothing outside routine, which also indicated then that it seems that there will be no military operation. It's just kind of attacks by the Turkish Air Force and also artillery. But definitely this is an escalation from the Turkish side, and definitely this is an attack and an aggression which undermines Syria's sovereignty.
Israel and Turkey have agreed to restore full diplomatic ties nearly 4 years after the two sides expelled each other's ambassadors over Israel's deadly aggression against the Gaza Strip. The Israeli Prime Minister Yair Lapid's office said in a statement that the move followed a steady improvement in relations between Ankara and Tel Aviv. The statement followed a conversation between Lapid and the Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan. It also highlighted expanding trade and strengthening regional stability among the joint goals. Meanwhile, the Turkish Foreign Minister Mevlut Çavuşoğlu said the restoration of ties did not mean that Ankara would abandon Palestinians and their cause. Two sides expelled diplomats in 2018 after Israeli forces killed dozens of Palestinians during their weekly protests in Gaza as part of the Great March of Return rallies and the U.S. opening of an embassy in Al-Quds. The Palestinian Islamic Jihad movement has vowed to continue resistance against Israel until the liberation of the entire Palestine. The group's representative to Iran made the pledge during a presser in Tehran on the achievements during Israel's recent deadly onslaught on the Gaza Strip. Nasser Abu Sharif also referred to the death of the Islamic Jihad senior members in Israeli strikes, saying those killings won't stop the movement's activities. He noted that the Islamic Jihad is well organized and that new figures would replace those martyred. Speaking at the venue, the Palestinian Hamas resistance movement's representative to Iran vowed to avenge the blood of the martyrs. Khaled al-Qadoumi also dismissed claims that the resistance groups are disunited. He said that Hamas and the Islamic Jihad have been working in coordination since 2014. Israel launched a 3-day offensive on Gaza on August 5, killing dozens of Palestinians. Response: the Islamic Jihad fired rockets, or hundreds of rockets, some of them deep inside of Israel. Over a dozen European diplomats have visited Gaza to assess the humanitarian situation in the blockaded coastal territory following the recent Israeli military aggression. Ashraf Shannon has the details.
Diplomats from the European Union, including heads of European diplomatic missions in the occupied West Bank and Al-Quds, arrived in Gaza Tuesday morning. The senior European officials toured the Shati refugee camp upon arriving in the blockaded territory. Their short visit comes less than 2 weeks after the Israeli regime launched a 3-day military aggression on Gaza that claimed the lives of 49 people, including 17 children.
We come here only 10 days after the ceasefire has been agreed. A ceasefire which gave end to 3 days of terrible fighting where far too many civilians, far too many children and women lost their lives. It's also to show solidarity to the Gazans in general, but also to the kids, the children who lost their lives, who were injured.
The ambassadors of the European Union made an inspection tour of the wounded during the recent Israeli aggression at Gaza's Shifa Hospital.
We briefed the European delegation on the humanitarian situation in Gaza and the dire condition of hospitals. The delegation also visited the patients and those who were injured during the recent Israeli military aggression. We also told them about the lack of medicines and hospital supplies because of the Israeli blockade.
The brief visit by the European diplomats comes at a time when the people of Gaza are suffering under a tight Israeli blockade that has been in place since 2007. Most Gazans rely on handouts to survive, and many of them are unemployed.
It's clear that many more people fell below the poverty line. Unemployment rate has significantly increased. Health and education problems have become even more problematic.
Palestinians and human rights groups have repeatedly slammed the European countries for their failure to take an action aimed at ending Israeli violations against the besieged territory.
Many here believe that the visit by the European diplomats will not improve the situation for the people of Gaza, given Israel's impunity and the failure of the international community to hold the regime accountable for its crimes. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
Israel has approved the plan to build hundreds more settler units in the occupied city of Al-Quds in defiance of international law. The Israeli municipality in Al-Quds issued a tender for the construction of over 400 settler units in the Sur Bahir neighborhood. The move was condemned by the Palestinian Foreign Ministry and Hamas resistance movement. They called it yet another Israeli attempt to Judaize Al-Quds and to change its Islamic identity. The ministry said, quote, "The racist, expansionist, colonial scheme undermines efforts to launch talks aimed at finding a solution to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict." It also urged the international community to force Israel to put an end to its policy of settlement expansion. Meanwhile, a Hamas spokesman said the Israeli crimes would be confronted with the unity of the Palestinians and their resistance. All Israeli settlements are deemed illegal under international law as they are built on occupied land. Britons are feeling the pinch of the deepening cost of living crisis as inflation hits a new record high. For the first time in more than four decades, the UK has registered a double-digit inflation rate. According to the Office for National Statistics, the Consumer Price Index rose to 10.1% in July from 9.4% the previous month. That's even higher than what the economists were expecting. Food prices are skyrocketing, and officials say that is the main contributor to the rising inflation. The Bank of England has already increased the interest rate six times to bring the situation under control. It is now predicting an inflation of above 13% for October and a long recession at the end of the year. Now to the latest developments from the war in Ukraine. Russian forces say that they have attacked multiple Ukrainian military targets using high-precision weapons. Ukrainian officials say two civilians have been killed and seven wounded in Russian shelling in the past 24 hours. Kiev says its armed forces have repelled Russian attacks in several directions, including Slavyansk. On the southeastern front, Moscow says Ukraine is trying to provoke Russian counterattacks by shelling the city of Enerhodar, where the Zaporizhzhia nuclear plant is located. In the meantime, the UN Secretary General Guterres is scheduled to meet Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky in the western city of Lviv to discuss the conflict, especially the situation surrounding the nuclear plant, which is currently in Russian control. The last French soldier has been expelled from Mali, ending nearly a decade of military disaster and humanitarian catastrophe in the African country. The new government of Bamako has refused to even allow a French ambassador to return, causing many to wonder if the era of French neocolonialism has begun its ending. Rami Massari has more from Paris.
The last French soldiers have left Mali after being expelled by Bamako following 9 years of unpopular war, which has left Mali one of the poorest countries in the world. 2.5 million refugees have been created, thousands of civilians were killed, and the politicians who initially colluded with Paris, widely accused of corruption, were ousted by popular anti-French protests in 2020.
Les Maliens, ça fait 9 ans que vous êtes là. Malians have been dying for 9 years. Things have only gotten worse. It has spread to Niger, Burkina Faso, Mauritania, and elsewhere. After 9 years, this hasn't worked, and Malians want results. However, when Malians made their revolution, France criticized and opposed it.
The roots of the Mali conflict run deep, but they all feature French aggression. In 2011, Nicolas Sarkozy illegally dropped 40 tons of arms to help overthrow the Socialist People's Libyan Arab Republic led by Muammar Gaddafi. Those arms spread to northern Mali, where the nomadic Tuaregs used them in their conflict with southern Mali, which has existed ever since imperialist France drew Mali's irregular bowtie-shaped borders. Paris alleged the Tuaregs were religious radicals, and in 2013, François Hollande invaded Mali prior to receiving the approval of the United Nations. Many allege that uranium deposits, which keep French nuclear power cheap, gold mines, and the desire to maintain the neo-colonial system known as France-Afrique were the primary motivations for a war which would be dubbed France's Afghanistan.
Many of France's former colonies gained their independence in the 1950s, but since 1960, France has had more than 50 military interventions in Africa.
The war killed 59 French soldiers, but French imperialism in Mali was cited repeatedly as justification in terror attacks in France, which cost hundreds of lives. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
Moving on to the latest developments from the Korean Peninsula, with reports of North Korea firing two cruise missiles towards the sea. The South Korean Defense Ministry says the two missiles were launched off the country's west coast. So far, no confirmation from Pyongyang. North Korea has been working on its nuclear program, despite U.N. sanctions in recent years. Pyongyang argues that it needs nuclear weapons for self-defense purposes. It's opposed to an irreversible denuclearization, viewing it as a breach of its sovereignty. Just hours before the launch, South Korea's president called for talks with the neighboring North, who said any future dialogue should eventually bring the two sides closer to peace, rather than being just a political show. And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
If you're interested to know about history, culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Bazaar.
Household appliances are universal and an integral part of our modern daily life. Nearly all households have some sort of appliance meant to bring ease and comfort to everyday domestic tasks. Additionally, these items assist us in preserving and preparing food, cleaning our clothes, and overall helping us stay healthy. In general,
The near 100% penetration of appliances in homes shows how crucial they are for our way of life and just how abundantly available these items are.
Hello there, and welcome to another edition of Bazaar. This week, we will journey through Iran's massive home appliance industry. We wanted to see how this sector has developed over the years and check out some major players in this manufacturing arena. But first, we wanted to see how some of these items are made and understand how much work goes into producing them. So, time to walk through today's Bazaar.
To become more familiar with this sector, we decided to visit Steel Alborz Industries. It was established 30 years ago and has since become a well-known household brand. This company began its work by producing steel sinks. Later, it added to its product basket and began manufacturing stoves, ovens, stovetop ventilation systems, and taps, among other kitchen attachments. With two factories in Shiraz and one in the capital Tehran, its production facilities can make hundreds of thousands of units annually in over 200 different models. One of these factories is solely dedicated to various molds needed to create its stylishly modern products. Early on in its manufacturing journey, this company used to import steel stencil sheets from Europe. But after becoming a subsidiary of the second largest producer of galvanized steel sheets, it began purchasing most of its raw material domestically. The company uses the latest technology to manufacture its products. Its production lines are equipped with cutting-edge automated assembly systems managed by experienced staff. Nonetheless important is the use of high-quality raw materials and strong sustainable designs are two key components in guaranteeing the long life of these kitchen appliances.
Here is a short word on the machines used in manufacturing home appliances in Iran. Many production machines and automated systems such as steel laser cutters are domestically produced. Of course, that's not to say all of them are locally made. Some still need to be imported, but it is noteworthy just how much of this equipment is already available in domestic markets.
Research and development and quality control are critical activities of this manufacturing company. The R&D department is responsible for developing new products as well as monitoring the market and customers' needs. Its quality control division is built into its production facilities. Here, items are frequently checked and tested with the latest technologies to ensure manufacturing uniformity. As you might know, this also guarantees that each item is made exactly the same, which increases the quality of the final product. The R&D and quality control departments are also responsible for implementing national and international standards, which led the way for its exports. Currently, this company not only distributes its products nationwide, but also sends its items to neighboring and Eurasian markets. This company largely attributes its success to its highly experienced and specialized staff, who are in charge of various production processes. On the whole, it has created numerous job opportunities directly and indirectly. Plus, it has dozens of representative agencies across the country. Like many in the home appliance industry, this company has faced many obstacles throughout the years. But its trump card has been its unique approach to solving these challenges. For example, the US-imposed sanctions were one that this company transformed into a domestic opportunity.
Now, Iran domestically produces a lot of raw materials needed in this sector, which spares local manufacturers from spending millions on imports. What's more, domestically supplying raw materials to the home appliance industry has helped it blossom. But you don't have to take my word for it. Here's an overview of the sector and its productions, including some insight into raw materials produced in Iran.
Iran is the 10th largest steel producer in the world, just behind Brazil. However, China is the undisputed producer with nearly 100 million tons of monthly output. That's just to give you an idea of how large the country's steel sector is. It's undoubtedly important, as the country's mammoth industry feeds numerous down-the-line sectors, including home appliance manufacturing. The World Steel Association's figures show that major Iranian steel mills produced nearly 30 million tons of crude steel and products last year. It might be interesting to know that over 30% of total productions are typically exported, generating millions in foreign revenue. But that's not the only industry that supplies raw materials to the home appliance sector. Petrochemical products, such as polymers, which are used to make plastic, also contribute to the production of home appliances. Iran's Home Appliances Manufacturers Union says some 15 million household appliances were produced in the country last year. That's far beyond the original production target of 12 million units set by the government. Meanwhile, Iran exports many of these products to neighboring regions, including Asia and Africa. Last year, the total value of exports was over $300 million, according to Iran's Trade Promotion Organization. All things considered, there is a lot to look forward to regarding Iran's expanding home appliance sector.
Well, it's time for me to step aside for several minutes as my good friend and colleague is out there on the field to give us one awesome report. Take it away.
COVID-19, a sharp rise in daily cases, new variants. I, for one, have lost the count of the number of times I hear these words in a day. Now, thanks to COVID-19 vaccines, more and more people are getting protected against the disease. However, in search of an alternative treatment for the virus, Sarah and I visited a technology hub located in the northeast of the capital, Tehran. It's called Pardis Technology Park, and it's home to a large number of SMEs and startups. Sarah knows a pharmaceutical company here that produces the first Iranian anti-COVID-19 drug. But we struggled a bit to find it. The park is huge, and there are a lot of companies here. And Sarah's ability to read maps is... never mind.
Come on, let's go. What are we waiting for? Are we supposed to find a treatment for COVID-19?
Hold on a second. I'm just looking for the address. Is it this one or this one?
Can we please get this over with?
202? You know what? I know a pharmaceutical company that is known for its COVID-19 treatment. Isn't this what you're looking for?
Yeah, I'm looking for a treatment for
COVID-19. Okay, treatment for COVID.
Get rid of the mask.
This is called Mim Daru Company, and it's a credible one. We should give it a try and check the products. Let's get in.
Celera Vera is the brand name of Iran's first anti-COVID-19 drug. It's the first drug in the world to be introduced as a four-component indication treatment for coronavirus. The nasal and oral sprays, oral tablets, and aromatherapy drop. The nasal spray covers the immune parts of the sinuses, as well as the areas where there is a possibility of increased virus counts. The tablet is absorbed by gastrointestinal tract and immunizes the blood. The oral spray is effective in pharyngeal region and reduces the coronavirus count.
At the beginning, we have accumulated a very rich archive of the experience of researchers for the last 60 cases. And it may be very surprising that the number of the citation in Google database was 337,000. It was a huge amount. It was, we can say, an ocean of data. We started with that. And we arranged that by data mining. We worked on those huge number of knowledge existing with respect to SARS, MERS, COVID-2, and some others. Finally, we reached to 737 papers, reports, and monographs. And based on that, we arranged a research team. At the beginning, it was less than 7, and finally, it reached to 31.
Coronavirus attached to cells using its spike protein. This protein binds to a receptor that sits on the surface of human cells. After that, the virus undergoes a structural change that allows it to fuse with the cell. Once inside, the virus is able to reproduce. Treatment with this drug requires using the 4 types simultaneously for at least 8 days. And by using only one type, one will not get the optimal result. According to the results of a clinical trial on Celera Vera, by using the drug, the treatment duration will be reduced to half and there will be no need for hospitalization.
Something we have done. In the highest level of technology and science and technology in the world. Fortunately, in a very big, since we were in the process of registering of patent, we couldn't publish, because if someone publish, cannot make a patent, it contradicts. Fortunately, this week we have received permission from European patent to publish. Fortunately, it will be published. The clinical trial has remarkable advantage. Those who used Celera-Vera in Imam Khomeini Hospital Complex under the supervision of Tehran Medical School University, Medical Science University, none of the patients were hospitalized. Patients became treated 5 days comparing to the control group. No people died.
We've had enough of theory. Let's put on our gowns and get into the practical side of things.
Here we go.
Yep.
Did you realize that every time we go somewhere, we have to stick to all health protocols? I'm really tired of that. Like,
yeah.
You know, the head cover, the gown.
I like my gown.
Yeah, it's cool.
Although, I don't like this cover.
Yeah, even though you're bald, you really don't need this.
I don't need it, to be honest. Sarah, we are here to do. We're not going to do anything, but we're going to check out how the process of making COVID tablets.
I'm really excited. I've heard a lot about it, but I've never seen how it's produced.
Okay, raw material is way here. This is a secondary weight room.
Okay.
The powder.
No, never. I've never seen the production procedure. There are a lot of devices here. I think it begins from.
Yep.
Which must
a mixer and a blender.
Blender.
So, okay. Yeah, the powder goes into this.
The raw material gets into this.
On it goes.
Oh my God, it's not working.
You went there? Yeah, it's not working.
So, I think it rolls over in the raw material.
Yeah, it mixes and blends the
blend together.
Powder. It actually keeps the powder after
it's blended.
Yes, mixed. What is it called?
As far as I can remember, it was, just a moment, do not say anything. Fluid bed processor. That's it.
Yeah, so let's just.
Yeah. Then we should
push it
forward.
Basically, it granulates the powder and coats the effective material on the excipient material.
It's a little bit complicated here.
Yep. Yeah, we did it.
Thing.
I guess you should push a little bit on that side. Oh, yeah. Okay.
It's done.
So, tell us.
I think you should tell us. I don't know in details what it is,
okay.
What it does exactly.
The powder is here.
Okay.
The air is blown.
It's blown from
beneath.
Okay.
The pollen goes into the ear, it circulates in this cylindrical shape thing.
Yep.
And there's a nasal at the top.
Nasal at the top.
It injects the effective material and the excipient material. What is excipient material again?
Material?
The
I'm not really good at those technical words.
It's not effective, right?
Yeah.
So it is put on it, and yeah, it's pretty effective in formulating, developing, and producing clinical material. This device is
I think in a standard size.
Yes, the granulation is when the particles are shaped in specific
size.
Yeah. So once the whole process is done, right? Then we will have a powdery kind of substance that will enter another device and tablets are made.
Are made. And do you have any idea what that does exactly? You know that.
Which one? Oh, that part?
That that part of it is the ear.
Yeah.
Okay, and then it is turned into pills, into tablets.
Not here.
After this process, are compressed into tablets.
Exactly. That's
okay.
Right.
Shall we?
Mimdaru produces other drugs too. For instance, curative drugs for migraine and allergies. However, since the pandemic hit, the company has put most of its focus on COVID-related drugs. Celiravira is not only curative, but it is also preventive. Taking Celiravira tablets every day and using nasal and oral sprays at the same time can reduce the risk of contracting the virus. Sprays can physically target and inactivate the virus before it enters human cells.
Mimdaru has been established as migraine innovative medicine. We tried, the first drug we tried to develop a new drug for migraine because it was written as a custom that migraine is incurative, but we tried to find out whether it's curative or not. Finally, we reached to this point that it's curative. And we worked with Tehran University for more than 14 years to develop the first completely innovative drug.
Researchers at a company recommend that nasal and oral sprays be used before and after going to high-risk areas, such as crowded centers or public transportation systems. All that said, if required by local law, mask-wearing and social distancing protocols should still be observed to reduce the risks of getting infected. What follows is merely a fun conversation I've had with Sarah, and I was trying to add a little bit of drama to our feature program. Please take local health protocols seriously.
You know what? I'm relieved. I can finally take my mask
off. Whoa, what are you doing?
Take my mask off.
Taking off your mask?
Yep.
You shouldn't do that, Omid. Because it's not 100% guaranteed. You really trust these little things?
Don't you trust
science? A spray for COVID-19?
It says this oral spray, according to clinical trials and studies, it's absolutely effective in reducing treatment duration for COVID-19 outpatients.
Wait a second. I personally believe in these kind of treatments for COVID-19.
Just take a couple puffs.
The virus itself is really vague.
Goodbye,
I don't think there's any treatment for
goodbye.
That. You're really naive. You believe now you're protected with that just, you know, spray, your little spray. It's going to protect you?
I trust science.
You trust science?
Yes. This is both preventive and curative.
It doesn't mean that you have to take off your mask.
Why not?
Okay, keep trusting that, but do not take off your mask.
Why not? I mean...
Because you're so positive.
I am positive, but I'm not COVID positive. Well, I might be positive.
You cannot meet people in public without a mask.
A huge body of research, right? So I trust science.
But I'm not really going to try that. But I'm going to trust science.
Many thanks for that wonderful adventure, as always. Well, there is still so much more that can be said about the home appliance industry and auxiliary sectors. So let's check out some news and trends before we go. Less than 10 years ago, Iran was a major importer of home appliance parts like refrigerators and microwave motors. But now, industry participants say Iran is nearly self-reliant on parts supplies.
The Association of Home Appliance Parts Manufacturers says 95% of the components and parts used in this sector are currently made inside the country. That's a bold figure compared to the past decade. The Ministry of Industry, Mining and Trade says making these parts inside Iran has saved the country some $500 million in imports. The association says there are more than 2,000 component manufacturing units spread across the country. Their productions not only meet domestic needs, but are also exported to the United Kingdom, Germany and France, among other places.
Across the country, thousands of industrial units are idle and waiting to come back online. Some of these units were also active in the home appliance industry.
Iran's Small Industries and Industrial Parks Organization said it revived roughly 2 idle units a day in the last 100 days. It says roughly 211 units were returned to the production cycle, which fulfills 13% of its revival target. Over 4,400 jobs were created by bringing them back online. Last year, the organization brought back well over 2,000 idle industrial units in industrial parts and zones. This is part of the Industry Clinics project. The objective is to assist idle businesses by addressing their needs and weaknesses to revive their activity.
Iran has unveiled its new line of dishwashing machines after years of research and development to manufacture these items.
So far, only one company in the country has achieved the know-how to make these machines that used to be mainly imported. These dishwashing machines were introduced to the market last year and have since grown in popularity. The company says it is launching its third and fourth phase production lines, increasing its manufacturing area to 40 hectares. This would make the manufacturing company the largest in the West Asia region. The company is also planning on partnering up with the National Bureau of Standards after purchasing advanced testing and lab equipment.
Oh, there you have it from the Home Gadgets. I have been Samson Sees. Sees you in the next Bazaar.
The ocean of dua.
Al Imam Al Hussein alayhi salam. Ziyaratan minni wa niyabatan an walidayya.
Why did you leave us to fend for ourselves?
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ونبينا محمد وآله الطاهرين. In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, and in this edition of The Ocean of Dua, we are trying to discuss and talk about the different aspects of Ziyarat Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam, Ziyarat al-Ashura. So stay with us.
Bari'tu ila Allah wa ilaykum minhum wa min ashya'ihim wa atba'ihim wa awliya'ihim ya Aba Abdullah inni silmun liman salamakum.
إلى يوم القيامة.
Brothers and sisters, previously we were discussing this part of Ziyaratul Ashura. Ya Aba Abdullah, إني سلم لمن سالمكم وحرم لمن حاربكم إلى يوم القيامة. O Aba Abdullah, I am at peace with he who is at peace with you, and at war with he who is at war with you, إلى يوم القيامة, until the day of resurrection. Being naturally inclined to perfection and being detached from imperfection and evil powers requires one's self to be ready. This is why we are starting to discuss the human soul or nafs, the ones will be able to express their hatred naturally from the forces of evil that have prepared their own human souls or their nafs. And there is a whole battle going on inside the human beings with the different faculties. If the faculties of anger and appetite are controlling over the intellect, the consequences will be nothing but chaos and tragedy. One of the most explicit traditions that explicitly and vocally speaks of the human soul as a battalion is the well-known tradition of Jihad al-Akbar. After gaining victory in one of the battles, when the Muslims returned, the Holy Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wasallam addressed them and said, مَرْحَبًا بِقَوْمٍ قَضَوُوا الْجِهَادَ الْأَصْغَرِ وَبَقِي عَلَيْهِمْ الْجِهَادُ الْأَكْبَرِ. Welcome to people who have completed the lesser jihad. They have completed the lesser and smaller struggle, and what remains for them is the greater jihad. Now, the people were impressed because they thought they had done the biggest part of their job. They thought they have gained victory over the enemies, and that is why they started asking, Ya Rasulullah, وَمَا الْجِهَادُ الْأَكْبَرِ. The Holy Prophet was asked, O Apostle of Allah, what is the greater jihad? And he, sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam, said, جِهَادُ النَّفْسِ, the struggle against yourselves. That is why the Holy Prophet has chosen this timing and this place to introduce جِهَادُ الْأَكْبَرِ to the people. The Holy Prophet Sulaiman is also reported to have said, إِنَّ الْغَالِبَ لِهَوَاهُ أَشَدُّ مِنَ الَّذِي يَفْتَحْ الْمَدِينَةَ وَحْدَهُ. The one who is victorious over his mundane desire, over his self, is more tough than the one who conquers whole city single-handedly and alone. So it is imperative for us to subdue the evil inviting self and attain the victorious state of peaceful self. That is how we will be always victorious in the battles of phenomenal world.
When people ask, I'm confused about which school is right or which madhab is right, go to Karbala. Look at Karbala, it clarifies it instantaneously. Anybody says, I'm confused, say, please go to Karbala and tell me what happened, why it happened, and what does it have to do with your religion. You will see it completely exemplifies, it clarifies, it takes all the blurs out instantaneously. SubhanAllah, that's the miracle of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Imam Hussein alayhi salam's main foundation of morality is, do not allow tyranny, do not allow evil doing, do not allow indecency. Why is Imam like this? Because he knows Allah, he appreciates him, he understands his dimensions. That's why we must love them so much. We must love them so much that don't let anybody else take us away from them. There should be no room in our thoughts. No matter who we admire in this world, no matter how great a person we look at, never move the Prophet and Ahlul Bayt out of the center of the heart. Never. They will know that their
their Khalifa lied to them because he told them they don't pray. And if they see them praying on the battlefield, their hearts will change. So stop them from praying. Imagine how evil these people were. That's how much lies they had. And you cannot eradicate this lie at the level that we're talking about unless you give your blood for the love of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
So this is how important it is to prepare yourselves for this detachment and for this attraction. Being attracted to the beauties and perfections and being detached from the evils and imperfections. And perhaps the reason why Imam Hussein alayhi salam was so steadfast in his repulsion from evil and love for perfection is that he enjoyed the station of النفس المطمئنة. According to a lengthy tradition narrated from Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, the 89th chapter of Holy Quran, or Surah Al-Fajr, is also named Surah Al-Husayn alayhi salam because of its concluding verses. These verses reflect the personality of Imam Hussein alayhi salam because he is the soul that enjoys serenity and peace. يَا أَيَّتُهَا النَّفْسُ الْمُطْمَئِنَّةِ إِرْجِعِي إِلَىٰ رَبِّكِ رَاضِيَةً مَرْضِيَةً. O reassured soul, return to your Lord, well-pleased and pleasing to Him, and enter among my righteous servants. His soul, Imam Hussein alayhi salam's soul, is freed up from all kinds of shackles of evil. A soul that is immersed in the love of Allah. A soul that enjoys the seat of victory. And this is the embodiment of another verse of the Holy Quran, أَلَا بِذِكْرِ اللَّهِ تَطْمَئِنُّ الْقُلُوبِ. Because in the shadow and through iman and faith, it is such itminan, it is such reassurance that the heart possesses. And Imam Hussein alayhi salam was truly the owner of reassured soul. Thank you, brothers and sisters, for staying with us in this episode. We ask the Almighty Allah to set us among the guided ones and the people of the straight path. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
الذي صنعت من الرمح منبرا ظمآن والزمان بعينيك ممطرا نعم الأمير أنت حسين وقدوتي ساروا إليك قلبي وعقلي ودمعتي يا محيي الكرامة تبكيك كل عين لبيك يا إمامي لبيك يا حسين
بالروح بالدم لبيك يا حسين بالروح بالدم لبيك يا حسين
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.